What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.
I like it early in the morning.
For most of us, there's one thing we absolutely have to have every morning: coffee.
Oh, for sure. I couldn't go about my day without at least 2 or 5 cups of coffee every morning. It's the best part of waking up and all that.
Yeah, I like a cup of coffee. Don't have to be the fancy kind.
I'm Jenny Kaplan.
And I'm Lindsay Rupp. And today on Material World, we're talking about my favorite drink, coffee. We're digging into how drinks evolved from those giant tubs of coffee grounds to cans of draft lattes, and how the industry got crafty and reverted back to big business.
Percent of Americans drink coffee on a daily basis, according to the National Coffee Association's 2017 National Coffee Drinking Trends Consumption Tracking Report. That's up from 57% last year. In particular, gourmet coffee consumption grew. 59% of daily consumption was gourmet in this year's study, compared to 46% in 2012.
Coffee's come a long way since those big Folgers and Maxwell House containers many of us grew up with. Now we hear about single-sourced coffee, fancy espresso-based drinks, and cold brew. The places we go to get coffee have changed a lot, too. People still make coffee in their homes, but many are Starbucks loyalists or love their local boutique coffee shop in the neighborhood. The craft coffee community is kind of like craft beer.
Right. Dedicated consumers will go out of their way to get coffee from a more artisanal place. The business side feels a lot like craft beer, too. Big corporations have been on buying sprees, snatching up smaller roasters to appeal to coffee enthusiasts.
We talked to Todd Carmichael, the co-founder of La Colombe Coffee, about how the drink has evolved. And it's come a long way.
Wow, yeah, it's been a ride. I mean, coffee from the turn of the century, so the 1900s to today, you can't even almost reconcile the two of them. Coffee, in the early 1900s was a commodity. All the coffees in the world were kind of blended together and kind of roasted the same profile and put in cans.
The origins of coffee as we know it today can be traced back more than 2 decades. We spoke with Andrea Illy, chief executive officer of Illy Cafe and grandson of the founder of Illy, for an education on the evolution of coffee.
Well, it's a continuous evolution, you know. It started over 20 years with a gourmet coffee. People discovered quality thanks to Arabica beans, thanks to espresso-based drinks. And this also created a lot of interest, you know. Also because the narrative of coffee did change dramatically. And since then, there has been a continuous evolution. Initially, this coffee craze was out of home, you know, coffee shops, and mostly espresso-based drinks. And then it became, pure origins. That's also very interesting. And in the last, 15 years, then the boom of capsule systems. Because capsule system allows you to get the same quality that you get in a coffee shop at home, in a very convenient and a very consistent quality. And this made, because cups are single served, this made the amount of type of coffee that you can enjoy at home to explode. And in the meantime, the quality and pleasure content was improving, this, which is the first virtue of coffee.
One of the biggest players in all this is Starbucks. Our friend Craig Giamona covers Starbucks for Bloomberg. We asked him to help illustrate how Starbucks pushed the movement forward.
Yeah, I mean, Starbucks is obviously a gigantic restaurant company, if you want to call it that. I mean, there's something like 13,000 Starbucks in the U.S. I mean, it's long been a joke that, there's a Starbucks on every corner. I mean, there's that famous Onion article about Starbucks opening a Starbucks in the bathroom of a Starbucks. So there's a lot of Starbucks. And it's certainly, I think when you think about Starbucks, they are certainly credited with kind of bringing European coffee culture to the U.S. I mean, I think there's coffee snobs out there that might not like that statement, but the bottom line is that it's true. I mean, you go back 20 years or 30 years and it was sort of Folgers and just giant things of canned coffee. And Starbucks kind of introduced, I think, better coffee to Americans.
There is kind of a symbiosis between Illy and Starbucks, because Starbucks did interpret in the American way the authentic Italian coffee culture, which is, I would say, Illy is interpreting in the best possible way. I don't say we are the only one, of course, but we try to interpret in the best possible way the Italian coffee heritage. Now, espresso, my grandfather has been the innovator with pressure espresso, and since then we have been the first exporting Italian espresso in the world and so on. And so Starbucks, by picking this Italian coffee culture and making it adapted to the American consumer, they've been excellent in spreading the coffee culture, raising the level of awareness. And so Americans literally discover high-quality coffee thanks to Starbucks.
Going back to the days before Starbucks, the dollar cup of coffee at a deli or, you know, even Dunkin' Donuts, I think it was just a cheaper kind of completely commodity market. And Starbucks introduced people to $4 and $5 cups of coffee. And now it's gone beyond that.
More recently, this continuous revolution is the new revolution. It's the so-called third wave, which is about micro roasters, including coffee growers, roasting coffee and exporting roasted coffee from Nicaragua, from Costa Rica, from Colombia, wherever. It's about really unique, specific origin, qualities, preparations. It's about new drinks, like cold brew is an amazing success that everybody drinks it, and it's very interesting and so on. So the revolution continues. It's an ongoing revolution.
We spoke with one such roaster, Todd Carmichael, who co-founded La Colombe Coffee in 1994. You heard from him at the top of the show. Todd has been in the coffee business for more than 3 decades. Also, fun fact, he was the first American to solo trek across Antarctica from the coast to the South Pole.
I guess it started in 1982, where this small company in Seattle was the first to offer me a job in a warehouse dragging grain sacks around. It was a small company at the time, 3 cafes, little roastery, and it was called Starbucks. I was pursuing my degree in business, and you know, I was working in coffee, and I just never separated the two. And it's some, I don't know how many years later, but I'm still kind of doing the same thing.
La Colombe now has about 26 cafes across the country, and its newest innovation is a canned draft latte. The drink is sold in stores across the country as part of the growing trend of grocers stocking more ready-to-drink brands.
The draft latte's response to 2 things, really. You know, the first is that, you know, the consumer is interested in drinking their drinks cold. And it was so much so that it became, you know, hyper material, that when I finally took the time to look at the drink critically, I realized that there was a missing component. In a hot latte, you have 3 components. You have concentrated coffee, you have real milk, and you have the third, which is vapor. In the case of a hot drink, it's water vapor. And when I looked at the cold category, I realized that vapor piece was missing. They're not lattes, they're not cappuccinos, they're just kind of, it's coffee and milk, right? So I went out, and the mission was to reintroduce vapor into a cold latte. And I did that by compressing nitrous oxide into a liquid, mix that liquid with coffee and milk. And as long as it's under pressure, it's a liquid. But the moment you release the pressure, that liquid gas becomes that third ingredient, vapor. In order to get that done commercially, I had to reinvent the aluminum can.
Increasingly, people are drinking their coffee cold. Grocery stores are giving more and more shelf space to cold brew and other kinds of fancy, ready-to-drink coffees.
This is the ice age. I mean, If you would have told me 25 years ago that more than half of the coffees consumed on premise would be cold, I wouldn't believe you. But that's the case today.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
La Colombe is still pretty much independent. The majority of the company is owned by the billionaire founder of Chobani Yogurt. But more and more, big companies are buying up their smaller competitors. JAB Holding Company has acquired Keurig, Caribou Coffee, Pete's Coffee and Tea, Stumptown, and Intelligentsia. Big beverage players like Coke and Pepsi are also boosting their coffee portfolios. PepsiCo has long partnered with Starbucks to produce their ready-to-drink products, and Coca-Cola partners with Illy in the U.S. and has other brands around the world. Dr. Pepper's Snapple Group is also in the coffee game. They distribute High Brew, which produces cold brew coffees.
It did happen with beer. Same. Microbreweries going along with the consolidation of the big brewing companies. So at the same time, you have this large consolidation made by mainly GAB. They invested $40 billion U.S. dollars in the last 5 years in order to become a fast follower of the leader Nestlé, you know. And now they are probably leading in volume, not in value yet, but, you know, they are really, really big. And now you have two big groups consolidating over 40% of the coffee volume worldwide. Is this good? I'm not sure. But this is what is happening. On the opposite side, you have a fragmentation of the coffee market with these tiny new companies like micro roasters opening micro stores, etc., with plenty of opportunity for diversification. So I believe that this micro roaster, they will probably reach maybe a 10% of the market, something like that. And this is a new dynamic. All in all, there will be definitely more product offering for the consumer, more variety and the capacity to enjoy a cup of coffee in any possible conditions, consumption occasion.
Most recently, Nestlé bought a majority stake in Blue Bottle Coffee for $425 million.
The basic broad stroke thing that's been happening is that big guys, so quote-unquote big food, and there's almost nobody that's as big as Nestlé, are buying up, you know, hip startups.
Nestlé holds the number one position in the global packaged coffee market.
Number one, I think the big thing with Blue Bottle is that they sell a lot of stuff directly to customers. And these companies now, in the age of Amazon and Whole Foods, these companies are desperate to kind of know more about their customers, to get that data and to have that relationship directly with the consumer. So, I mean, Blue Bottle has their cafes, but the cafes are almost kind of just like branding, whereas I think 75% of the business is them selling coffee directly to consumers. So I think that was probably a big part of it. And, you know, Nestlé also wants to get more into the U.S. They have the Nespresso business here, but, you know, that's a machine that really has played second fiddle to Keurig in the U.S. And they're not really, you know, I think Nestlé wants a bigger presence in U.S. supermarkets. So that maybe you'll see them take the Blue Bottle brand and use their relationships that they have with every single supermarket in the U.S. and try to take the Blue Bottle brand wide as a premium brand, you know, because I think the European companies in particular have identified the U.S. as the best consumer market in the world. I mean, Western Europe has certainly slowed down. And there's obviously a lot of money to be made on premium coffee in the U.S. And you know, I think that has to be what Nestlé is thinking about, which is how much can we make on Blue Bottle bags of Blue Bottle coffee, you know, in Walmart and Kroger and Target and in all these stores at a time when Americans are clearly willing to kind of pay up for good coffee.
We spoke with Blue Bottle founder James Freeman about the acquisition and why he chose to sell.
You know, approximately 68% of our company was owned by 252 investors before the transaction with Nestlé. So one of the desiderata was just we could, you know, have one investor instead of 252, even though our 252 were great and supportive investors. So that was important. And also the nature of our agreement with Nestle, our CEO, Brian Meehan, is his name. He carved out a way for us to be, I think, out of the 8,000 food brands that they own, you know, we're the only standalone entity with a separate board. We don't have our, like, we're not in the Nestle system, not in HR or finance or anything like that. So we have a separate governance. And, you know, our plan is the same as it always was, is to build more cafes and make more delicious coffee. That's what Nestle's invested in.
La Colombe's Todd Carmichael says he's a fan of more competition because that leads to more innovative products.
For me, I don't want to see too much consolidation because I like the idea there are lots of us working on the same problem. Competition is one of the, you know, things that help drive the company and drive the industry. So too much, I don't like it. But having said that, you know, the future is pretty exciting for the small and the large. And, you know, having more players in it is best for everybody.
Andrea Illy says there's actually room for many more roasters to get into the coffee game.
If you make a comparison with wine, you know, similar industry, very experiential product, 100% natural, blah, blah, fantastic. 5 millennia of history for wine, only 1 millennia of history for coffee. So, but coffee appears to follow a similar trend, you know. And if you look at the structure of the wine industry now, is only about, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of winemakers. In Italy, which is the leading country for wine, number one country, wine producing country in the world, over 300,000 winemakers, you know. So 300,000, only 1,000 roasters. So there are probably 30,000 coffee roasters in the world. Maybe in 10 years will be 300,000. I mean, this is probable. Also because I predict that another, you know, similarity compared to wine, the most effective strategy by which peasants growing grapes came out from poverty because they were also poor and they were squeezed by winemakers to whom they were selling the grapes. They integrated vertically. They decided to become winemaker themselves. They made the investment of a cave and starting producing wine themselves. This can occur in coffee as well.
Since the majority of Americans drink coffee every day, it's easy to see why companies are going after it. The opportunity is enormous.
Coffee is the, you know, by far the hippest possible drink that you can have, to such an extent that there are more people drinking coffee in the United States compared to people drinking tap water or bottled water. Did you know that? 62% of people drink coffee every day. Only 55% drink bottled water and only 47% drink tap water. So
wow.
That means that people literally feed and thirst themselves, you know, through coffee.
Like 90% of people of coffee drinking age drink coffee, you know, whereas like 4% of them eat hummus. I mean, think about it. The average American drinks 17 ounces of coffee a day. And you look around, you realize that's just about as much as they drink all, you know, beer, wine, and everything else together. It is the quintessential American beverage, coffee.
That's it for this episode of Material World. Thanks for listening. For more episodes, we're on Apple Podcasts, the Bloomberg Terminal, and anywhere you listen to shows like this.
For more on coffee and all other things you drink and smoke, follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jenny M. Kaplan. For more on the other things you buy, like clothes, follow Lindsay at LC Ruck.
Material World is produced by Magnus Henriksen and Liz Smith. Francesca Levy is the head of Bloomberg Podcasts.
We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Someone actually called me Lorelai Gilmore over the weekend because I was drinking so much coffee.
Who was it?
It's girl Megan. She's like, oh, you're having a Lorelai Gilmore moment. Mm.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox president Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.